This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
Welcome back. It's hour number two of Three Man Front. Pat Smith, Lange and Roberts, John Saber. Kind of keeping our eye on what's going on out in Oklahoma. Nothing new to report. Brent Venables is one of the names, the hot names. Dan Lanning, the defensive coordinator at Georgia, the other big name that they keep talking about.
I think it's a smokescreen. There's just
You think Matt Campbell? You think he's the man?
I don't think.
You think Gary Patterson, formerly of TCU, you think that's a name?
I think it's a name that. Yeah. Now I would just be. I find it hard to believe they're not going to go with an offensive minded guy. You're replacing Lincoln Riley. Like I said, worried about recruiting, and I think that you need to bring in a offensive guy that is going to move the needle, maybe with a fan base. And I don't know if he would fit.
And I so know you're pushing Lane Kiffin.
I'm pushing Lane Kiffin. I think it'd be a. I think that would be a great. I don't know, long term fit. We don't know. We don't know if he's going to be a long-term fit at Ole Miss, but he just won 10 games in Oxford, Mississippi. I think you'd do a lot worse than Lane Kiffin.
No question about it. And maybe Spencer Rattler would stay at Oklahoma as opposed to going somewhere else. I don't know. But speaking of the portal, Auburn made more news. Landrum, another couple of Auburn players decided to jump in the portal. And by the way, 1,471 players entered the portal in the month of November, a record, 1,471.
All right, so in addition to Auburn running back Sean Shivers, wide receiver Elijah Canyon, edge rusher Caleb Johnson, now Ladarius Tennyson, a defensive back and offensive lineman Tayshawn Manning have entered the portal. So five Auburn players so far. And the list will grow, but not only for Auburn. The list is going to grow for Alabama after their season concludes, or maybe even before. We've already seen a couple of guys that have declared that they're going to go into the portal. They're in the portal, so this is the new day in college football.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Yes, a couple of Alabama players earlier this week. My anticipation is after the SEC championship game, there will be more players that will go into the portal. And one name that we saw earlier this year, Alabama cornerback transfer Marcus Banks, remember him, 6 foot, 170 pounder, formerly of Houston, Texas. He has scheduled an official visit for another SEC school. You want to take a guess? Another SEC school.
Vanderbilt.
Marcus Banks, where do you think he's lined up to go visit?
LSU.
Kentucky.
Yeah. Hey, big news for Mark Stoops. He's got the contract extension through 2028. Mm-hmm. You win one game, you win more than seven games, you get an additional 1 year. 10 games, you get an additional two. So that is without them giving him the John Calipari lifetime. That is Barnhart giving him the lifetime.
Yeah, no question about it. But back to Banks. Banks is reportedly has interest from Oregon, Mississippi State, Mizzou, Miami, Baylor, Florida State. And speaking of Oregon, it appears that Joe Moorhead is one step closer to becoming the Akron head football coach. Reports this morning said Akron had zeroed in on Moorhead to become the Zips' next head coach. The Zips are expecting to hire for the perhaps this weekend to make an announcement after the Ducks play in the Pac-12 championship game. And I want to remind you about the championship game. Tickets for Less, they are your source for Bama football tickets and championship game tickets. Find the best selection of seats without those added taxes and those per ticket service fees that you find at other ticket sites. Go to ticketsforless.com. Call them today, 205-758-1199. Visit their office at 1410 University Boulevard or shop online at ticketsforless.com.
Before we preview this weekend's championship game with the Crimson Tide and the Bulldogs with Connor O'Gara, we will take Tim in Homewood's phone call. Tim, how are you? Welcome into Three Man Front.
Hey, thanks, guys. Hey, I had some thoughts on that portal before I get to what I actually called about, but do you guys think that this extra year of eligibility that all these guys got, I feel like between that and the portal, it was like the perfect storm of college parity. Don't you think that's kind of reason we have been seeing all these crazy swings and upsets, and I just think that might have something to do with it. You know, everybody getting that extra year.
And not only that, getting the extra year, but they also have that one-time transfer that they can go play immediately within the conferences.
And so you're just plugging. You're kind of cherry picking. Absolutely, Tim. It's a great point, and that's totally the reason.
I think there'll be a whole new world to come when we start doing the transfer portal and all those rules. I'm just talking about when you combine that with COVID. Anyway, I think there's a lot to say about why a team like Auburn can, you know. Anyway. Iron Bowl is why. Is it too late to still talk about Iron Bowl? Y'all just tell me. I'll hang up.
No, I mean, that's fine. We got Connor on hold, but if you want to go ahead and make your point, go ahead.
Well, I just felt like it was one for the ages as usual, and it's always such a crazy special game. But as an Auburn guy, and you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this, but as an Auburn guy, that was just like a microcosm of my 35 years of fandom being an Auburn fan. It's just brutal. But it was beautiful. It was one of the greatest games ever. But, I mean, if we just get – tell me if I'm right. The face masking that didn't get called, would that have ended the game as well? First down, run out the clock?
Yeah.
Am I remembering that right?
There were so many examples. I mean, Mike Bobo.
But, I mean, I know if Tank just goes down in bounds, right, we probably win. But I knew as soon as it got to overtime – and, of course, it's going to be four overtimes because it's always something you've never seen before. But I know that if he'd just gotten down, we won. But I thought that face masking call was after, and that would have given us a first down, four more downs, run the clock. Typical, just snatched, just brutal, just heart-wrenching, typical Auburn game. But it was a great one.
It was. Tim, we appreciate you. Thank you. Let's go to Connor O'Gara. Saturday down south, we preview Alabama and Georgia. Connor joins us on the Bud Light Hotline. We were just talking Iron Bowl with the Tigers and the Crimson Tide last weekend, Connor. Has that changed your opinion, your perspective on this weekend's championship game between Alabama and Georgia as we approach?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I think it has to. I think you've seen the way that this Alabama offensive line has really struggled down the stretch. And oh, apparently they were going to have right tackle figured out. And then anybody who watched that game would have told you that that is not figured out by any stretch of the imagination. And it's weird to be talking about this group this late in the season having struggled so much. And I think you look back at the body of work and you're like, wow, this was not a vintage Alabama team by any stretch. Six of the eight SEC games that they played were one-score games in the fourth quarter. And this is a Georgia team where if you don't have that offensive line figured out, man, that defensive line can make it a long day. It is not exactly a get-right group to go against. So, yeah, I mean, it has to change your perspective. And it felt like Bryce Young was working against everybody, including his own team. And I just don't feel like we're used to seeing that from Alabama, a team that had 34 consecutive games with at least 30 points. Watch that streak come to an end against LSU. And then, again, we see them struggle to score against Auburn. If you were hoping that Alabama was going to figure some things out down the stretch, the last month didn't give you exactly a lot of confidence that it's heading in that direction. I think that Georgia is in a good position to be able to take care of business in this one. But, yeah, I mean, it's been a very telling month of November, I think, for the Tide.
And you were talking about, obviously, the offensive line issues, and we've all seen it throughout the football season. But the defense has really stepped up, and statistically speaking, maybe not as dominating as the Georgia Bulldogs, but they have put together some really nice numbers, some really nice games, and Will Anderson should be in the mix for all sorts of postseason awards. Do you believe that this Alabama defense can step up to the plate and at least perhaps give the offense a puncher's chance in the second half?
It has to. It simply has to. I mean, that's really what is going to allow them to stay in this game. If Alabama is going to go 60 minutes with Georgia, we're going to have a lot of questions about Stetson Bennett against this defense. We're going to be asking those questions throughout this game. Is Will Anderson getting to him? Is Phil Mathis getting to him? Does it look like they're making those open field tackles and Zamir White isn't busting loose or James Cook or guys like that? That's what we need to see from this Alabama team. And, you know, to their credit, they did keep Alabama in that football game, albeit against TJ Finley with a bum wheel. But at the same time, you know, they've had to be put in those spots this year, and they've had to get off the field and get those tough stops on third down. So if you're hoping for a close game, and if you think that that is something that Alabama can actually manufacture, you've got to like the chances of this defense to be able to hang around. Where it gets difficult is if Georgia is getting all these short fields, and Bama is gassed by the fourth quarter. That's where this Georgia team can really wear you down, and they could put their foot on the gas in the third quarter and kind of get some separation. So I do wonder about that game script for Alabama. But yeah, I mean, this defense has been really good. Is it an unpopular thing to say that Pete Golding has risen above expectations? I mean, I know that's not popular, but you know, they got to give the guy a little bit of credit given where, you know, this team could be right now.
Given both of these teams, I don't look at Georgia, Connor, as a juggernaut running the football. I mean, they've been just so complimentary and played as a team in all three phases all season long. Alabama, Brian Robinson Jr., we know about the injury. He's not going to be 100%. You mentioned the offensive line. So then, you're right, it does kind of come down to quarterback play. If there's a weakness on this Georgia Bulldogs football team, where would you identify that weakness?
Well, we just don't know what it looks like with Stetson Bennett trying to convert on third down in the fourth quarter, right? The stat that I keep throwing out there this week is that Stetson Bennett has 10 fourth quarter pass attempts this entire year. Bryce Young had 10 fourth quarter pass attempts on that drive for 97 yards, that alone. So that to me is just the question mark. And it's not even necessarily a weakness, but the latest that Georgia has trailed in a football game, 9:42 left in the second quarter against Tennessee. We don't know what it looks like when Stetson Bennett is in those spots. And if you are trying to have to convert with him and it's third and nine and you're down a touchdown, what does that look like? To me, that's the big question that we have about this team, because they've been able to figure some things out from a passing perspective. If you still think Stetson Bennett is the same guy who played against Alabama last year and really kind of got pushed off the field in the second half of that one, think again, because he's connecting on those downfield passes. Brock Bowers has been a revelation. Ladd McConkey, of all people, has stepped up big for that team. And oh, by the way, George Pickens is going to be back in this game after getting some reps against Georgia Tech last week. So I look at this passing game and I say, yeah, we have a ton of questions, but could they still actually be getting better, and could they still be showing more things down the stretch? We'll probably find out in a game like this.
All right, Connor, in regards to last night's college football playoff rankings, a lot of us kind of scratch our head each and every Tuesday night, and then we kind of dissect it on Wednesday. What were some of the takeaways from last night's show?
Well, I think the selection committee is telling us Alabama's got to win in the SEC championship to get into the field, unless the Kirk Herbstreit chaos scenario unfolds, which is basically like everybody losing in these conference championship games, getting the anti-chalk pass on Saturday. Unless that happens, I think Alabama needs to beat Georgia to make the playoff. I don't think a two-loss Alabama team, even with a close loss against Georgia, gets into the field. I just don't. I think the selection committee told us, look, 2 weeks in a row, they put a one-loss team ahead of Alabama. That was Ohio State last week. It was Michigan this week. They're telling us that the resume isn't quite what we think it is. And you kind of look at it and you're like, well, Alabama's second best win is a 7-point win at home against Arkansas. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. The Ole Miss win is great, but that's the problem. And so that's where I've been banging the drum for weeks now, saying that I think Alabama is not going to get in as a two-loss non-SEC champ. I don't think the first two-loss team to ever make the playoff is going to be a team with Alabama's resume. So that's kind of my takeaway. I'm fascinated to see this Cincinnati thing play out. If Alabama wins, how that could potentially impact Cincinnati making the field, because then if Oklahoma State wins, maybe they jump them. I think we have a lot of questions left to answer this weekend, though it does kind of feel like we could be seeing a whole lot of new blood in the playoff.
Connor, if Kirby's smart, and we know about the struggles with Alabama and versus his old boss Nick Saban, if that happens, Alabama wins this game, how much differently will we and the rest of the college football world be viewing Kirby Smart, and what will people be saying on Sunday?
If Alabama beats Georgia, this is another yeah, but. I mean, for this to happen a fourth time, when Georgia's the favorite in this game now, and you can talk about the blown second half leads, but I mean, there are some numbers here that just baffle you, and if it continues on Saturday, you're going to wonder if it's ever going to change. I mean, think about this, guys. Like, three fourth quarters that Kirby Smart and Nick Saban have faced off, and Nick Saban has outscored Kirby Smart 31-0. I mean, that is incredible. And, you know, you look at the time led during those games as well. Like, Kirby led for 98 minutes and 55 seconds. Saban only led for 31 minutes and 28 seconds. I mean, this is a rivalry that has just been, it feels so one-sided, but at the same time, it really hasn't been. And if all of a sudden this pops up again and we see a chink in the armor for Georgia, who, by the way, is in the playoff, like, that's happening even if they lose 35-0. But if that happens again, we're going to question, wow, is Kirby Smart ever going to get over this hump? This is the year in which you can make it happen. I think everything is lining up in favor of the Dogs. I think it's Georgia's year. But cosmic forces suggest that this game is going to find a way to be close and that it's going to come down to a critical play at the end.
We're talking to Connor O'Gara, who is the lead national columnist there for Saturday Down South. He's joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. All right, Connor, it's always the fun time of the year. We talk talking season in college football prior to kickoff. You take a look at projections and predictions and things of that nature. I know you went back earlier this week and started looking at some of your projections after the regular season ended. What were the ones you would like to take back, and which ones would you like to stand on the highest mountain and crow about?
I'll take back my Florida and LSU projections of, I had them both. Look, you know what? Like, everybody was kind of wrong about that. A lot of people were anticipating the bounce back year for LSU and were questioning with Florida. All right. Yeah. It feels like a floor season for Dan Mullen. How low is that floor? Pretty low, it turns out. I was dead wrong about those two teams. I was off by three games with them, but you know, I was probably one of the few people it felt like, at least, I was really going to bat for Arkansas. The preseason projection I had for them was at 7-5, and I said they're going to beat A&M for the first time in a decade, and I think they're going to beat Texas. And those things were able to happen this year. So that's the one that I kind of felt proud about. Predicting Bama to go 11-1 and lose to Texas A&M. I'd like to say that that was really impressive, but then I doubled back on that during the season and I said that Bama was going to beat A&M. So I can't take full credit for that one, but you know, I like doing these projections because it kind of forces me to keep up. To be honest, not every team can win eight games. When you actually sit there and break it down, I think for the most part, I didn't have too much egg on my face this year. So that's always the goal. I just don't want to get cold taked at the end of the season.
All right, Connor, given all the candidates that we heard throughout the LSU coaching search, Scott Woodward, give him a letter grade on the hiring of Brian Kelly.
It's an A. I mean, it has to be. If you're one of those people that's saying, well, Brian Kelly can't win the big game, that's a Notre Dame thing. That's not a Brian Kelly thing. All right. Like, Notre Dame has three wins against AP top five teams since 1997. That's long before Brian Kelly showed up there and actually stabilized that program. And all he's done in the last 5 years is I'm one of those people that's been saying Brian Kelly is one of the best coaches in this sport. We need to see what it looks like with more talent. He's going to get more talent. He's not necessarily a guy who is a product of these big game experiences. I don't think you can look at his, you know, playoff losses at Notre Dame and say, oh, that just shows you he's not going to be able to beat Alabama. Let's see what it looks like when he gets more talent in there. One of the best coaches in the sport. He's been one of the best coaches in the sport for, you know, the better part of the 21st century here. So I think it's an A for Scott Woodward. And I think it's about as good of a hire as you could have asked for if you're an LSU fan.
Connor, great stuff, man. We appreciate it. We'll enjoy the game this weekend and sure, we'll talk to you very, very soon. Thank you.
Sounds good. Appreciate it, guys.
Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. Carefully brewed, the clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there. I started playing through all the crazy scenarios we could see on Saturday with this game in Atlanta, Pat. Wouldn't it be just fitting? Stetson Bennett, he's struggling in the first half. Alabama's got the lead. Second half, JT Daniels emerges.
Kind of like when Alabama had issues.
Except this game goes times overtime, and it's Bryce Young that actually, on second and 26, throws a touchdown pass. Alabama still wins in this scenario. I was just throwing that out there. It'd be interesting. It'd be a lot of fun. 6.5, that's still the line with this championship game. So one of the closest lines that we see out there. You got double-digit line with mm-hmm. Michigan over Iowa.
Yeah.
You have double-digit Cincinnati in Houston. And the games that are really relevant, I don't know. Speaking of Brian Kelly, is he too old?
What?
For LSU.
Too old for what?
We'll discuss it next in Pat Ponders.
Three Man Front, weekdays.
Right here on Jax.
Jax 94.5.
It's Three Man Front here on this hump day. Lanton Roberts, Pat Smith, John Saber, running things behind the glass. Hope you're doing well. We got Pat Ponders rolling up, but still coaching searches going on. There is a little bit of smoke coming out of Norman, Oklahoma, Pat, that the Sooners could be naming their new head football coach within the next 24 hours. Brent Venables, his name. Dan Lanning from Georgia, his name. Those are really two of the names that we've heard, but that's about it. As far as Notre Dame and their coaching situation, we know Brian Kelly, not only is he not going to coach in the bowl game or the college football playoff, whichever it may be, he might not be stepping foot back in South Bend at this time, but it does look like Marcus Freeman or Luke Fickell would be the Irish's top choices. And it could be a situation where you just basically swap. If Luke Fickell was to take the Notre Dame job,
yeah,
Marcus Freeman
goes to
would
Cincinnati.
Go to Cincinnati, but also in the mix for the opening there at Duke when David Cutcliffe decided he would mutually walk away.
Folks in South Bend, they have been reporting that they believe that Swarbrick has made some type of communication with Fickell's representation. And the feeling is that they will be more than happy to wait for him to come on campus after the college football playoff. So after this weekend, you could see it move quickly. They could potentially name Fickell as the head coach at Notre Dame. They simply wait. And then, like you said, then Freeman would be free to go back to Cincinnati where he just came from.
Yeah, it's very interesting. SMU offensive coordinator Sonny Cumbie, he is the new head coach at Louisiana Tech, taking over for Skip Holtz. Also, we told you that Mark Stoops got the new deal through 2028 and a great extension there with the Kentucky Wildcat program, 9-3 this year. Mark Stoops, what a wonderful job he's done in Lexington. Wallace State women's basketball beat Northeast Mississippi last night, 58-52, to improve to 4-3 on the season. The Lady Lions get back into conference play tomorrow on the road at Chattahoochee Valley as part of the Wallace Chattahoochee men's women's doubleheader. For more information on the Lions, search social media for WSCC Athletics. We do have Pat Ponders coming up, but we do want to go to Brad and Homewood first. Brad, welcome into Three Man Front. Hope you're doing well.
Mr. Roberts, Pat.
Hello.
Hey, Bear. Hope you're all having a great day.
Hey, Brad.
I'm in traffic right now, headed to Gadsden, but I will say one of the most cliche things, and I know this is kind of a little bit off topic, but everybody talking about halftime adjustments, and once the offense coordinator gets off their script, is just comical to me, because the script adjusts the whole first quarter, and they're making adjustments all the time. With technology today, these guys were on the phone, they're on headphones. Nobody's sitting there going, when we get to halftime, I'm going to ride the elevator down. I've got 4 minutes before they go back out, and I'm going to make all these adjustments that are going to change the outcome of the game. I think some of the fans are delusional, and some of the broadcasters just kind of putting that out there. Really, really just kind of phantomized the whole thing about what really happens during game time decisions. And, you know, it's not necessarily an Auburn thing, but, you know, with Bobo getting fired, and I don't agree or disagree with it, but everybody arguing about second half adjustments has always just confused me, because that's not a real thing. I don't understand it.
Yeah, and we appreciate the phone call, Brad. Yeah, if you watch coaches, they have, especially now with all the off-the-field guys that you have and the help that you have, the eye in the sky in the box or the eyes in the sky, you're seeing certain things. And so whether it's, you know, the offense, when guys come over and they're on the dry erase board and they're talking to the coaches, you're making adjustments right there. I mean, that happens at the high school level. Certain other things, it's not the halftime adjustments. And maybe it's more a point of emphasis on one big thing that could be happening, and you're re-emphasizing it during the half. But, I mean, halftime is, for the most part, for the halftimes I was a part of, It was, all right, guys, message by the head coach. You're meeting with your position coaches, just kind of reinforcing things. It's not like, all right, everybody pay attention. This is what they're doing. I mean, you're seeing it in real time, and you're going back and you're reporting. And sometimes it's your position coach going, all right, what are they doing to you? How are they blocking this? Or how are they attacking you? What are you seeing? They're asking the players that. So, anyways.
Well, I do think halftime adjustments is a real thing. Absolutely. I mean, there's too many examples of that in football, whether it's high school, college, professional, whatever the case may be, because those adjustments, as he was talking about, yeah, most offenses will have their first, what, series, first 10 plays, something like that,
right,
kind of scripted out what they would like to do. But then certain things dictate you to get off that so-called script and to move forward.
Well, here's the thing, and it's not just – yeah, you have your shot sheets with offensive coordinators and everything else. They have more than just the first drive scripted or the first 20 plays. It's situational, as you just mentioned. All right, we know that what we've seen of all their game film this year and this guy's history, 75% of the time, they're going to give us this look. When they give us this look, or their personnel comes here or here or here, this is where we're going to hit them with this. I mean, they're just referencing what they've already, the planning that goes into it and just seeing it firsthand is pretty remarkable what these coaches and the amount of time that goes into it, and a lot of stuff they scrap and they never use. So, yeah, I would say that they have a whole book, and it's situational and things that they can use and they pull out in those certain situations.
Yeah, and again, I just respectfully disagree with the caller. I appreciate his call and in the opinion. I just feel that there's so many different examples that you could give, whether teams – on the adjustments, again, you got to keep in mind that it's the first time that you really get all your players and coaches together at the halftime situation. You know what I'm saying? So that you can go over those things and make the adjustments. And sometimes teams will make those adjustments for the better. And then you have coaches that perhaps say, well, we're going to continue to do what we do. And that's why the other team appears to have, oh, look at the adjustments that they made, while the other team decided, you know, what we're doing is our game and we're going to keep it going. That's one reason why maybe Derek Mason didn't make certain changes you saw in the second half of the Iron Bowl.
All right, quickly, we'll go to Rick and Pelham. Rick, welcome to the Three-Man Front.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Question, in your opinion, who screwed their university more? Would it be Brian Kelly or would it be Lincoln Riley with Notre Dame kind of in a hunt for the playoffs and then the way Lincoln left? Who do you think messed their university up more?
I will tell you, hands down, 100%, no doubt in my mind, is Lincoln Riley and what he did.
I agree.
And the reason why is because he apparently, his representation has had these type of communications since September with USC. So he was coaching throughout the season knowing that he probably was not going to be the head coach at Oklahoma. Now, do I think that he threw games? Do I think that he did things that would put or compromise his team or Spencer Rattler or anybody else? Absolutely not. But I do think that that was always in the back of his mind. And then he had LSU come calling. LSU started flirting with him. And then all of a sudden, things happen. Then he leaves. He takes the coaches. And then this situation about his assistant coach that is yet to make his appearance at USC, but he's apparently still out recruiting with Bob Stoops. And you got players on the recruiting trail citing that, hey, this coach at Oklahoma, he's been talking to me about going to USC for weeks now. That's a problem. And so with everything about being left at the altar, if you're an Oklahoma fan, but now you're getting the recruits that are decommitting, you're getting people going into the transfer portal, I don't think there's any doubt that Lincoln Riley, what he has done, it's been basically
been a
nuclear bomb that's been dropped in Oklahoma.
He's been plotting. And how long Dennis Franchione was doing that while he was still the coach at Alabama?
Dennis Franchione was looking to get out of Alabama the moment that he got his first tough question at Alabama.
But you're right. So Clay Helton is fired middle part of September. It was September 11th, 12th, something like that. And then the search began. If he has been going back and having conversations or his representation, communication with him for the majority of the football season, not only are you sitting there thinking, okay, well, it's going to be mine. They told me these are the terms of the deal. You've been stringing your program along. You said no to LSU. You got up in front of your media members that cover your program and said, I am not taking the LSU job. Knowing good and well that you were just waiting, biding your time to go and say, you know what? Yep, announce it. The deal's done. So have you had your whole heart invested in those kids in that season when you're getting paid by a university? Yeah, he is really screwed that program. And where do they turn next? After he was handed the keys in a very fortunate situation at a young age of a turnkey program and what Bob Stoops left him.
Yeah, and you look at the situation with Brian Kelly. Landrum and I, actually, one of our breaks, there was a video posted by a player from Notre Dame in which you can hear the whole speech, and it was too long for us to air. And to be completely honest with you, I have a great deal of respect the way that Brian Kelly handled that short meeting with the players. He was very honest. He said, this was an opportunity for me and my family. I think this is a situation that we needed to take. So I've got no problem with anything that he told the players. I'm sure the players were disappointed. All of them had been recruited by Brian Kelly, but he was forthright in his decision making, at least to the players before he left. So I've got no criticism of that. But Lincoln Riley doing what he did and the way he goes about it when he was contacted, the way it was handled, things of that nature, very disingenuous.
Yeah, and I think for Brian Kelly, you think about where he was at Notre Dame, what was the likelihood that he was going to be able to win it? Not only some of the academic standards, but also just not being affiliated with the conference. Brian Kelly, he's a great coach. And for him, and I don't think it was just totally a money thing. He's making really good money in South Bend. I think it truly was about, all right, well, I've been at the mid-major level. You know, I worked my way up. I had success at Cincinnati. I got this great job, and I've given how many years of my life to this program and done great things at Notre Dame, a BCS national title appearance and two college football playoff appearances, consistent, consistent, consistent. Why not, if I got the opportunity to go and coach at LSU, which is a top three job, in my opinion, in all of college football, let's see where I stack up against a Nick Saban.
Let's listen back. This is what Brian Kelly said to his players yesterday down in Baton Rouge, the first time that he had an opportunity to get in front of them.
My name is Brian Kelly, and I am your new head football coach. Look, it's day one. It's the first time you've met me, so I'm not here to win the press conference, okay? That's going to take time. You know, we're going to develop a relationship. It'll take time. It's built on trust. It's built on how we go to work every day. It's built on the things that we set as a standard within this program. Look, let me tell you why I'm here. I'm here because I wanted to coach the very best players in the country that are afforded the best resources in the country and play in the best conference in the country. That's an incredible challenge to a football coach. And I get that here, and I get a chance to work with the best athletic director, president, all in alignment to get to the end of winning a national championship.
So again, the very best players, a shot at Notre Dame, best resources, shot at Notre Dame, best conference, not playing in one at Notre Dame, the best AD taking a shot at Swarbrick, working now for Woodward, taking a shot at the president, talking about everybody being in alignment for that one goal, which is winning the national championship.
Best food in the country. I mean, you could have mentioned that. Love some Cajun cuisine. It's really good. Game day atmospheres. I mean, the list could have gone on and on. Can't fault Brian Kelly. One thing we will discuss, though, next, is Brian Kelly too old?
Why do you keep saying this?
Is he too old for LSU? We'll discuss it. Pat Ponders.
Three-man front, weekdays.
Right here on Jax.
Jax 94.5.
Three-man front, Jax 94.5. Matt McLaren at the top of the hour. Takes you until 2 o'clock. For some of you, Paul Feinbaum. Until 6 as we preview Alabama and Georgia, the college football playoff rankings coming out last night. No surprise, Georgia at number 1, Michigan at 2, Alabama at 3, Cincinnati at 4, Oklahoma State on the outside looking in as it stands right now at 5. Then there's Notre Dame, and how things shake out this weekend will be the big determining factor on what we are looking at as far as the college football playoff, the matchups we'll get, and that ought to be a lot of fun as far as the bowl announcements we'll get as well.
Yeah, that all comes out right after the college football playoff announcement. They're obviously, we'll do the top 6, and then after that, they'll talk about the New Year's 6. And where everybody will go bowling, including UAB.
How about Archetype and Homewood? Check them out, archetype.health, 205-803-1234. Then get you out of pain. You got low back pain, maybe jaw pain, migraine, whatever it is, chiropractic care. You might be skeptical. Well, don't be. I was over 2.5 years ago. I went to see Dr. John Palmer, his staff. They're wonderful, but it's a one-stop shop. It's revolutionary as far as how they approach things, and it's just total body health. It's archetype.health or 205-803-1234. Man, Pat keeps referencing Brian Kelly and being too old for LSU. We'll discuss it now in Pat Ponders.
Never said that.
Alabama Roofing Professionals, the only name you need to know when it comes to your roof. The free roof inspections, warranty, any work they do, whether it's repair, replacing your roof, or just giving you the double thumbs up. Hey, man, you're good. It's no cost to you. Also, the blow-in insulation service, keeping your home energy efficient 12 months out of the year. Alabama Roofing Professionals, 205-722-ROOF or alroofpros.com.
Question number one, with Brian Kelly entering the Southeastern Conference, he'll be the third head coach in the league that's currently 60 years old. He joined Sam Pittman and Mike Leach. Of the three, who's most likely to reach 70 years of age at their current school?
At their current school, I will say it will be Sam Pittman.
Sam Pittman, yep, thinks he gets to the age of 70, which is obviously 10 more years there in Fayetteville.
Be 10 more years, but he hasn't had the stress of being a head coach as long as the other two. I could see Leach.
So he's got a little bit more tread on the tires.
Going enjoying the keys. I could see Brian Kelly either because he hasn't won enough. Let's just, it's going to be a more volatile environment he's going to be in. The expectation with what he's going to be making is going to be there. The expectations, while they're going to be high at Arkansas now with what Coach Pittman has done, I will say it is going to be Sam Pittman.
The correct answer is Mike Leach at Mississippi State because, as you mentioned, expectations, even if they find a way to have a 10-win season like Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, they know that that's not going to be sustainable. So if he keeps winning 6, 7, 8 games or so, every now and then finds a 10-win season, even if he has a 4 or 5 win season, they're going to be perfectly fine. And I don't see him. I think he's gotten to this mountaintop of being in the best conference again. He's tried his damnedest to get back here. And now that he's in, he's not going to want to leave. Pittman, as good as I think he is for Arkansas, if a bigger Big 12 job comes open, I see him going. And I don't see Brian Kelly finishing 10 years at LSU, whether through incompetence or success.
Yeah.
Leach is going to go hang out with that monkey at that bar near his house.
He's doing what, probably
the
doing
pole
that
assassin? What are you talking about?
No, there's a monkey that apparently hangs out at this certain bar where he has his house in the Florida Keys. I don't know.
Yeah, he's probably doing that now, and then he'll come back home and go to Mississippi to work.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
And Starkville will be perfectly fine to have him do. I mean, Mullen was given how much leeway?
Plenty.
Being crazy and weird, and
I see Sam Pittman just being he loves football and everything about football, and I see Mike Leach just being that different bird that wants to do other things, and finally one day he says, you know what, I'm good, made enough money and coached in the SEC, wanted to see what that was like, I'm just gonna go hang out.
I mean, you think back to coaches in the league when they've stepped out or they've so-called retired. You had Stallings at 71. Steve Spurrier was 70. Nick Saban will turn 71 next football season on Halloween. So,
how old is Brian Kelly?
60.
He's 60. You know, Brian Snitker didn't win his first title until the age of 66. So, just saying.
Speaking of Brian Kelly, should Brian Kelly have waited to see if Notre Dame makes the college football playoff before leaving for LSU?
See, I said this. I don't even, yeah, because you're putting in, waiting the extra 5 or 6 days. I understand going and trying to assemble a staff, Pat, but I think Scott Woodward would have been okay. Maybe he wasn't. Maybe that was just the deal. And a bold, ballsy move by Scott Woodward, if it was, when you apparently had all of these other big names just leveraging or had another job that was in mind, like Lincoln Riley's case, and Jimbo said, no, I just signed an extension, not going to do it. But, yeah, I would have waited and made the announcement when they're officially not in the college football playoff on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, he should have, but then again, to me, that shows that he's ready for this job. Because, as you mentioned earlier, Pat, that's six fewer days of recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
You got the early signing day coming up. You've got to get here and get in front of things. And apparently, if Lincoln Riley's been telling people for months that, hey, you know, I'm going to USC, not that they're going for all the same players, but there may be some that you would in theory be 6 days behind. So as much as it would have been nice for him, maybe personally, to make sure that he didn't have a shot at the playoff, and also, I still think probably would have played out the same way with him having a 4-minute meeting with his players. No, he realizes the lifeblood of everything that matters in the SEC is recruiting, and the sooner he can start doing it with that SEC emblem on his shirt or tie or jacket, whatever he's going to wear. Well, he's not wearing a jacket. It's Louisiana. It's probably 90 degrees down there. But the sooner he can do it, the better. So if he has to burn that bridge in Notre Dame, whatever, they'll clap for him eventually when they come back to honor him, because last I checked, he's still the winningest coach there ever.
Yeah, and you look at the situation, what you have to do now with roster management, you have to actually show up as the new coach. You have to meet with the current team and try to make sure that any of those players, you're basically recruiting your roster to make sure those guys aren't getting in the transfer portal. Then you have to go out and develop those relationships with the high school coaches, high school kids that Orgeron and the previous staff had looked at. So again, every single day that went by, that was getting a lot more nerve-wracking for the LSU folks. And Brian Kelly is just a few moments away from speaking at his first press conference there in Baton Rouge. Baseball fans, you're getting a little nervous because tonight the collective bargaining agreement could end. That's why you're seeing a rash of all these free agent signings. Over $1 billion has been handed out this offseason already for free agent pitchers. And again, that's highlighted by Max Scherzer. But my question is this. Rob Manfred is proposing in this new collective bargaining agreement that baseball's playoff would be expanded to 14 teams. Currently, there are 10 that qualify, 5 in each league. But under this proposal format, the top seed in each league would receive a bye, as in the case with the NFL's current structure in their playoffs. However, Major League Baseball's proposal would allow the other two division winners in each league to choose which wildcard team they would prefer to play in the playoffs. Better record, you get the first option of saying, hey, I want to play the worst team. Or, hey, you know what? We beat that team 6 times in the regular season. Let's play them. Is this a good idea for Major League Baseball's playoffs?
Yeah, I think it is a good idea. It does reward you for winning the most games. And you might have a situation like this. You're looking at a team like Atlanta that could barely this year get above 500, right? But they were the hottest team in baseball since the start of August. You take that into account. It's all about trends, right, and how a team is playing. So, yeah, would, you know, whoever is the winningest team, whether it was the Giants or whoever, yeah, you get to pick the matchup that you want, not necessarily based on record and how it lines up traditionally as far as the playoffs.
So you like it.
Yep.
You would endorse it, okay? Yeah, how about
fine.
You, John?
I guess ultimately I'm fine with it. I don't know if I like 14. I mean, that's about half the league. I don't know if I like that in
it
there.
It would almost be half the league. You're right.
But it looks like that's where we're headed. So if I don't have a say in that, then I would much rather it be like this, to where they get to pick. Because I do think that offers some intrigue because, again, conventional wisdom says, oh, yeah, I want the team with the
worst
record.
You have a show on the final day of the season that night, that Sunday night. Because, you know, all major league games, you know, first pitch is always at noon on the final day of the season at 6 o'clock that night. Okay, Atlanta, who you want in the first round? You know, that kind of thing. I think it would be intriguing. I think it's a nice little twist to the playoffs.
I guess the question is, after that, then what? Is it seeding, or is it do the teams get to choose then after that? Or?
Well, yes. I mean, based on your record.
Record, and after
it
that.
Goes
and then
down. Yep.
If we're going to do that, then it should still be whoever has the highest record should get to host.
Correct.
Unlike, you know, this year where, I mean, kudos to Atlanta for doing it, but Atlanta shouldn't have been hosting.
Don't you guys find it kind of weird how again, these owners have given out.
They screwed us out of the All-Star game.
They've given us. $1 billion they have spent already this offseason in free agents, and at midnight tonight, they're going to lock the players out.
Yeah.
Now, what sense does this make? Yeah, we're going to give you this contract, Max Scherzer, but you know what? You can't come to work until probably February or March because we're going to lock you out.
It's incentivizing them to get back on the field.
Well, not everybody's making Max Scherzer $43 million a
no,
year.
No, they are not. Only Lincoln Riley and...
And Brian Kelly.
And Brian Kelly.
And Mel Tucker. Guardians combined.
And Mel Tucker. Let's not forget about Mel. Mel got a good deal.
That's Pat Potters, brought to you by Alabama Roofing Professionals, 205-722-ROOF. We appreciate Brad Edwards breaking down all of the different scenarios we could see in the college football playoff rankings. Kyle Parmalee previewing all the state championship action coming up beginning this afternoon at Progressive Stadium, our Protective Stadium, and then also our buddy Connor O'Gara Saturday down south. So we preview Georgia and Alabama. We'll continue to do that tomorrow, Pat.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun tomorrow. Brett Noiseworthy will also join us as we will kind of put a recap on the SEC season, get his feelings on the Heisman Trophy. You know, he's a Heisman voter. He can't tell us who he voted for, but we can get his insight at who potentially might be in New York.
That's going to do it for us, the Southern Scotsman. Matt McLaren comes your way next.
This is Three Man Front on Jax 94.5.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.